Hello, James here. Just wanted to make a quick preface to the upcoming episode. We had a few technical difficulties, and with Ken out in Watches and Wonders, enjoying the delights of Geneva, we struggled a little bit to connect fully, and so the episode was a little bit aborted. You'll know what I mean when you've had a listen. But we've managed to stitch together a decent amount, and we have a part two and possibly even a part three, hopefully in the works shortly. So apologies for the sound quality issues and a few ups and downs during the episode, but we very much appreciate your support and we'll do better, we promise. But enjoy episode 28. Thank you. Hello and welcome to episode 28 of the Form and Function podcast. I am James and I am joined by Philip as usual, Ken as usual, but we have a special guest. We have Tom Clements from the other British watch brand in the room, Clements Watches. Tom, hi, how are you doing?
Hi, James. Hi, folks. Yeah, really good, thanks. Really pleased to be here. Surprise guest, it's nice.
Live in the field.
Yeah, live in the field. Our roving reporter, Ken, who's managed to make a friend already.
There you go.
There you go.
Wherever I go, Tom's there. If I'm up north or if I'm across the sea.
Do you think there's like a kinship that's built out from the British watch thing? I know you guys, you've met before that, hadn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not necessarily confined to British Watchmakers Day earlier in the month, but Ken and I have been buddies now for a little while, to be honest. And I mean, we've been on each other's radar for a lot longer, I think, since day dot, really, for Clements and Ark, and we were sort of on each other's radars. We started almost exactly at the same time, and since kind of the early days, Ken and I have been chit chatting, and it was only actually, was it like last year when we met in Glasgow the first time?
So I first fell in love with Tom back when he took me out for an Indian date in Glasgow, nice. And we had dinner, and that's over a year ago now.
Yeah, it was a while ago. It was really nice actually. It was when Jason Heaton was down in Scotland for. Sort of a bit of a road trip in
there. TGN meetup thing.
Yeah, and there was a meetup arranged, so Ken and I both attended, and yeah, we decided to go and grab some dinner beforehand, and yeah,
it was really good. Yeah, it was really good.
Mother India in Glasgow, great place. That's where the bromance started.
That's where. What music was saying? Do you remember? Is that? It's important.
It was probably very. Very, very cultural to the restaurant.
It was very cultural, isn't it?
Yeah, cultural to the restaurant. It was cultural. It was appropriate to the say. But the food was really, really good.
It was Kylie.
It was his recommendation.
Yeah.
It was actually an Australian mixtape of all our favorites. Yeah.
Nice. And for reference, you both are in Geneva at Watches and Wonders Week and all the other trade shows that are on. So you're on the ground, aren't you?
We are indeed, yeah. Fresh off the plane. Ken and I have both landed around the same time this afternoon, and after getting through passport control, we've quickly popped up to our respective Airbnbs and got prepared, and here we are.
The security in the airport was insane. Like, I was in the queue for maybe like an hour and a half.
Really?
I was in the queue already an hour when he messaged me saying, I've just landed, I've joined the queue, and it's massive. And I was already waiting for an hour.
It was really nice when we landed because the queue was massive and it was down this extremely long sort of kilometre long corridor with different coloured sections of ceiling. So every sort of 100 or metres or so, the ceiling changed colour. So Ken and I were messaging each other and I was like, oh, I'm sort of near the toilets if you can see those. And Ken was like, look up at the ceiling. And I was just like, looked up expecting to see something. And it was only then in a separate message, like, what colours are seeing? Like, oh, okay, now this makes sense.
So I could see how far he was from like where I was. And he was way back. He wasn't even in the blue. And the blue is where the gates were. Yeah.
Is Geneva normally like that then?
Last time I was here, I don't remember it being that bad. But I mean, like, I think because of Watches and Wonders, like, accommodation at this time of year is, like, really, really expensive, right, for starters. Last year, so this is the third year Watches and Wonders has kind of, like, been, like, in full swing since COVID, I think. right? But the first year didn't have max capacity because like places in Asia still had like lots of restrictions and all this, that, and the other. Last year was kind of the first year where everyone was present. And now this year is the year that like people are kind of more comfortable to travel. So like it is rammed, absolutely packed. So maybe that's got something to do with it. But I mean, it's a Wednesday.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, that my Airbnb host was explaining to me that Geneva does get extremely busy, unsurprisingly, for Watches and Wonders and prices increase. But yeah, I'm not sure if it's related, but hey ho, it was a fantastic mountain view along that kilometer long corridor. So I was pretty happy to chill out and enjoy the scene.
Do you reckon there's a good vibe? Does it feel like a good vibe? I mean, Swiss and vibe doesn't really go together in my mind usually, but
we haven't had a chance to get into the mess of it. But
from the airport, yeah.
Apart from the airport, yeah. But I mean, like it seems good so far. Like from everybody else's Instagram stories and stuff, it seems pretty like nuts and stuff, which is good. Tudor's doing I was going to tell you actually before you came up. Tudor's doing like an in city event thing tomorrow evening, I think, where they'll have all the new novelties in the store to have a look at.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, nice.
So that's cool.
Amazing.
Yeah, so that's cool. So yeah, we'll probably pop to that and have a little look at the new jobbies.
I wonder if that's the same, like you can look at it and buy it at the same time. They did that last year, I think, didn't they? Remember they had that?
Yeah.
They had basically a shop.
I think they did it last year.
Pop-up.
I mean, maybe. I mean, there's going to be a queue, right? Like to get in and stuff. That's the nature of it. But hopefully there's some familiar faces and we can be like, hey.
As long as the queue's not as long as it was for the moon swatches. Then
I think you're going to say as long as it's not as long as the security in the airport. Because I'm not waiting an hour and a half to look at some Tudors. I'm sorry. Like I love Tudor, patience. But not that much yet.
Especially this year. Mm. But...
Should we do a risk check first, James?
I was going to say, let's do a risk check before I kick off. Let's do two things, actually. Risk check and what watches have you brought with you? Have you brought just one? Have you brought a whole load? Because I guess neither of you are kind of exhibiting, but I imagine, are you going to wear a different watch every day? A different colour every day, maybe?
I didn't actually think about that.
Yeah. Do you want to go first, Ken?
Oh, I mean, for what I'm wearing the same thing I've been wearing for like the last few weeks and I haven't taken it off. So this is because I'm kind of like trying to make this the staple, as in like this is the one that the guy from Arkan wears. Do you know what I mean? Like, so yeah, I'm putting some mileage into this. But as far as what I brought, I just brought like the wears, you know, like the wears to show. So I've got one of each color basically, just for people to have a little look at if they bump into me.
Ken, you're kind of leaning into the Patek thing this year. They've gone for like a blue. Kind of jeans.
Blue denim.
So I've heard it's same. Not actually denim, you know.
Yeah, no, it's not, so it's not denim.
It's like printed. It's yeah. Like, yeah.
Leather.
Yeah.
Is it?
So that's weird. Yeah. I mean, I get down with the denim strap, though.
Do you remember when Britney Spears and Justin Timberlake wore that whole denim-like outfit in the 90s? That's what it reminds me of.
Yeah. What is it called? The Canadian tux. Yes, is it the Canadian tux?
Yeah.
I'm here for double denim, you know.
You rock double denim. You can pull double denim off. Yeah, I can't quite pull that off.
That, it's quite a Scottish thing, isn't it? I mean, I think a lot of denim.
I don't know about that, but I'm certainly not a Scotsman, so
you're strong.
Although I do live there, of course, but. Yeah, I don't know, James. I'm not sure. I'll have to start surveying a bit more intensely and pay more attention to folks' denim. I'll let you know.
You can be our denim reporter. There we go.
And we have like a small segment every episode, and he's like, "Yep, still double denim." Yeah,
I'm going to jump on the Patek one because they've done it to their ugly watch. What is it called, Philip? The Nautilus or something? Not a little known thing.
Isn't that the travel time GNT one?
No, there's another one that has it as well.
Basically,
they did it with the small seconds one as well, right?
So quite specifically, they've done a strap like yours with a similar type of integration into, I can't remember what the actual, to be fair, I was so shocked to see the whole ensemble.
It's a Nautilus with the small seconds. It looks massive. It looks a little bit like an Invict watch.
It's horrible. By the way, this episode will be, we will not be ticking the box for being a clean episode. I think let's just get that out of the way now. So you can feel free to use whatever language that comes to mind.
Oh, it's a chronograph.
Yeah. Is it? I mean, does it really matter at that point? It's just so ugly. I have a problem with Patek sport watches anyway, aesthetically. I don't like the design, but like stick on a denim kind of semi-integrated thing and it's just like, what are you doing? It's bad.
So so what watches did you bring, Clint?
Right, we're gonna have to rein James back in this episode.
Yeah, we have to temper him because we're gonna just have these angry lash outs in between.
To be fair, that's one of the worst ones. I think I've started high. I think that's the one that annoyed me the most. What are Patek doing? That was what annoyed me. I think the rest, it's all kind of down. It's all down from here, but it's all slightly less vitriol for the next ones. I promise.
That's good. We started high. We can.
Yeah.
So I've bought a small arsenal of the Monroes with me. So I've got three. I've got one which I'm wearing at the moment in Highland Amber. I've worn because I know that Ken loves this one.
I do love that.
And I've got to say, actually, it's really nice for me to be wearing it because obviously I've sort of tested them and sampled them and worn them plenty, but only normally in the safe confines of our HQ back in Edinburgh. It's only been a handful of times I've actually worn these out in the wild, so it feels really lovely to be out and about in this.
Is that your one, the one you wore when I last saw you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's your one.
Yeah. So all of my watches in inverted commas are basically just the prototypes.
Yeah.
So this is one of our prototypes. So you might hear the rotor kind of spinning from time to time. And that's one of the improvements we've made to the production pieces, which I haven't actually spoken about publicly yet. So there we go. We've got a hot take. And then I've also just on the table over to the side of us, I've got our little watch pouch with several others in there as well. I've got
is this a new green one?
Yeah, this is all new.
Because I've only seen it in blue.
Yeah, so this is what all of our watches are going to come in. This is a...
Oh, that's naughty, that is.
It's nice. Crazy horse leather. It's got it's really waxy and oily, so it patinas like crazy. Well good. It's got, I think they call it a high pull for folks who are...
Scratch and sniff good leather.
We're going all the senses here. Yeah, have a good sniff. Yeah.
You know that good leather smell. Man.
So yeah, so in there we've got the Ridgeline, which Ken's just checking out now, which is our sort of tricolour dial, and then also our pitch black.
Again, this was it QVC. So I'm exhibiting these while he's talking about them to the boys.
To your point, James, I'm not sure if I'll rotate whilst we're here. I might do. It's quite a cool idea.
We all really love that yellow one, by the way. So you're definitely wearing the right one.
Cheers. What about you? What are you wearing today?
What am I wearing? I'm wearing Longines Houdinki.
Nice.
Zulu time.
Is that a 39, right?
Yeah, the titanium 39 jobby. Yeah, James had it until he disregarded every watch above 38 mil.
I have. I'm on a kick, which is one of the reasons I'm annoyed by Watches and Wonders, because I went to this thing of I sold off a load of watches, building up a nice pot to buy new watches. And then this crap comes out and it's like, what am I going to spend my money on now? I'm going to have every color of Doxa sub 200 or something.
So what slightly smaller watch are you wearing, James?
I'm wearing my from last Watches and Wonders, the Tudor Black Bay 54.
Nice.
Now they've done the gold 58. I'm confident they're going to do a gold 54.
That would be absolutely
A gold. I think a gold 54 is on the cards 100%.
And it'd be more affordable because less grammage of gold.
Tudor will find a way. But do you know what? I found out though that the cost of it was, it's like what, 30 grand or something, right?
Yeah.
The gold black. Yeah, it's like 30 grand
difference between that and the Rolex.
And a gold sub.
Yeah. What?
And the majority of that's the bracelet, by the way. I think it was 10 grand if that's the bracelet or something like that.
That is a madness.
It is, isn't it? Okay, well, let's talk about Tudor then, because I think there's some positivity there. What caught your guys' eye other than, I mean, the gold, actually, let's finish the gold one. Green dial, what do you think about the green and gold?
I like it. I like green and gold. I mean, it's not new though, is it? Because that was released, a little while ago. But it, I mean, it looks fantastic on the bracelet. I tell you what, though, I'd be absolutely gutted if I had bought it 3 years ago and it had been sort of, you know, patinaed, as we say, over the last 3 years. And then
That's a good point.
Getting a little tumbling machine or something for your gold bracelet might be a little bit much.
I'm sure Ken can stonewash your 10 grand gold bracelet.
I wouldn't touch that, man. That's a job for Tom Place, that is. You give Tom the bracelet and he straps it to his body while he does all his stunts, and it's like a fast track of like natural wear, and he'll just catch it up to speed because he just wears stuff at the twice the speed that we do.
Or he just puts it in the bag with his other watches.
Yeah.
I really like that. I think it's really cool. I wouldn't buy one for that price. There are probably other gold watches I'd buy first, maybe. But I think it's really cool. If they did make a 54, it would be even cooler, I think.
Black and gold. Or a blue and gold 54. Yes, all day.
See, I don't love the green and gold, if I'm honest, because I think it ruins the shade of gold. I think it's
I think the green needs to be
quite punchy.
I think the green needs to be darker.
Yeah.
Like a darker green.
Yeah.
With the brushing on the gold as well, it's a bit much with all that gold on display. I've been watching a couple of videos, sort of live videos of it today, I guess. And I've lost the love for it a little bit. I mean, it's a cool concept, isn't it? To say like an all gold Tudor just seems like a crazy thing. Who's going to buy it?
So I like that it's brushed, though. I think that's like it's if you want the tooly version of the gold watch rather than the shiny one.
On Hodinkee Radio, they said it's the James Stacey gold watch.
No. Oh, is that? Yeah, that makes it. Yeah, because it's a little bit more understated.
Yeah. I mean, the idea of understated gold watch is just, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'm a rose gold person, too, actually. I think I like rose gold. I kind of, if I'm going all gold.
I'm with you, James.
Yellow gold just isn't quite doing it for me.
So while we're on green and gold, just very quickly, those Vacheron were actually really nice.
Super nice. Super, super nice. That is probably the nicest collection that has come out that I've seen from so far, from any brand.
That's how to match gold and green. I think they've
nailed it.
Not to do Tudor down, but although maybe the theme for Tudor this year is not quite getting the colours right, with one exception. Because I reckon, whipping back to Tudor, the 58 GMT, I think that is awesome in so many ways, but I think that gilt colourway, I like a bit of gilt.
I needed no gilt.
It doesn't work.
So I saw a render where someone took the gilt out and replaced it with silver, and I don't know whether, I mean, it's okay, but I think, I understand why they put the gilt on, because they wanted it to look a bit like a Bakelite bezel and all of this sort of stuff. So I understand why they've done it. I think it just opens the door for them doing other ones later, and they probably just wanted to cement it with, like, if you think about it, every time, the first Black Bay 58 was this kind of, like, gilt classic
look.
The first Black 54. Bay was... Yeah, the first 54. So I think it will just open it up in the future to do other things. And I think they just wanted to lean heavily into that Bakelite bezel kind of original GMT. The bit for me that's missing is that the GMT hand's not red. The fact that that's gilt. That's probably where the over-gilting comes from.
The over-gilting.
The guilty pleasure. That's the new nickname.
Yeah, I'll show you this one. Can you see that?
Oh, yeah, I saw that as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
If it was not gilted, I would be tempted to get it. I think because of the the 5-digit GMT Masters, the Coke one is probably my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and mine.
So I'd be tempted. I'd be tempted by it if it wasn't gilt, but the gilt, I'm not into gilt really, or it's just not my thing. That's why the new mono Black Bay all day.
You like to live guilt free, do you?
Yeah, guilt free. That's exactly it, man. Yeah, you know what they say: a minute on the wrist, forever on the hips. So yeah, a completely, like, that is, if the FXD didn't exist, that would be the Tudor for me. The FXD is, by all accounts, the Tudor for me. But
which color?
Black one, obviously. Man. Black, yeah. One, man. Like, the black FXD is just the one. Every picture I've seen, there's not a single bad picture of this new Black Bay. From, yeah, every photo, in every lighting, in from every publication or influencer who's been there, like, it's just right down the middle, man, in all the right ways. And yeah, the thing in my head is, like, if I got it, I'd do what a friend of mine, a guy, one of the guys who listens to the pod, and he was helping me out at the booth, Joe. He got a Ranger bracelet for his Black Bay, and it works wicked. So, like, I would get the Ranger bracelet, stick it on the mono Black Bay all day, every day.
And I was going to ask, if you were going to get the mono one, would you get it on the 5-link or on the Rivety?
If I'm just picking between the two, I'd probably get the 5-link, because I'd know I'd want to get the Ranger bracelet for it, to be honest. Like,
yeah.
Because the Ranger bracelet is the one. Because it's not got the gilt and anything now. It's like, it's completely modernized, right? And, like, the Rivet bracelet is nice, but the Ranger bracelet doesn't have it, which is kind of the modernization of it with the T-fit, yeah, and all the rest of it. Like,
it doesn't make sense with that better color scheme, does it?
Yeah, it fits better. So I'd do that. It's a perfect combo.
So I reckon if they'd done the 5-link on that, on the 58 GMT, it might have sat a bit better as well.
Yeah.
I think it would have leaned into that, the kind of the vintageness of it all a bit more.
One of the general themes that seems to be cropping up is that the Rolex and Tudor are starting to make bracelets available as a third party purchase.
Yeah,
I heard that. Yeah. For the new GMT Master 2, they're now, like, for people who go and buy it, you can essentially buy the GMT, that specific color of the GMT Master 2 now, with both bracelets, if you want, yeah, both bracelets. Sweet. Yeah.
And same for that gold 58. If for people who bought the one 3 years ago who want the bracelet, they can just buy that, which is, that's a relatively, as in, buy it from an AD. So there's no, like, special order stuff. You can just go straight into your AD and they can just order it as an
order. Order it like a part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that appears to be the case indeed for others. So I wonder if as things tick on, they're going to start making bracelets just, you know, a more of a universal thing, more of something you can just, you know, you can buy a couple.
Like a strap. Yeah, like a strap.
That's all it is, isn't it? It's not a.
Because you can do that with, like, the Tudor, like, NATO straps and stuff like that. You can go
and
order them.
Yeah, you can order them, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I guess it's only.
I think I quite like a 5-link on the 54, actually. I think that would be quite cool.
Yeah, I was going to say that would be nice. That bracelet's really well constructed as well. I don't know whether you tried one, but it feels almost more solid than a Rolex Jubilee. It's just, I think the links are slightly wider or something like that. It feels really nice.
I think because it's too shiny.
Well, you just get out that rubber I've got, James. And
yeah, that's true. That would take a while, wouldn't it?
I think what Tudor have done here, though, is they have set the foundation for them to basically dominate over the next few years, because they've now got a GMT movement. They've now got a really solid line at 41 mil. They've basically got every dive watch, a GMT. Now all they need to do is bring out a slimmer chronograph. They can basically just eat market share away from other companies quietly. Mm.
Smaller range would be nice as well, just saying.
Yeah.
yeah.
I mean, they could do that. They've got to do that. They can do that in the 54K, surely.
Yeah, and then you get the smaller Ranger bracelet and put it on the new monochrome 54.
It all comes together.
Tudor's plan is unraveling.
Fun enough, they do tend to test stuff on 58s, weirdly, thinking of bracelets and stuff. So the gold bracelet is the first non-riveted one, isn't it? I think available for that size.
Well, I mean, it is their, like, breadwinner, isn't it? That's their breadwinner model. Like,
but if you remember, the T-fit was first on the copper one. That was where they tested. The first ever T-fit class was on the copper bracelet. Yeah.
Do you think it's because they are making those in smaller quantities, and so it's kind of safer to take those ones?
Maybe.
So I've heard that, and I've also heard the idea that those metals are softer, and therefore that you've got a bit more to place around with the tooling, so you don't have to worry like around the tolerances and that sort of stuff, or you can manage.
I would have thought it would have been harder with it being softer, because of like cutting it and like finishing it and stuff is just a pain.
I'd like to think it's not a problem for these guys anyway.
Well, yeah, it's that's also true, yeah. But then again, you never know, because like, you know, for as big as they are, like, still get bezel issues or like issues and that. So, you know, that QC hurts everyone, man. Like, big or small. It's just one of them.
Both of you looking quite pained by that
thought. Yeah, we both know the struggles, man.
Like, we've seen things.
We've seen things, yeah. That's exactly it, yeah.
Talking about seeing things, the release from Invicta. I mean, Rolex, sorry.
I thought you were going to lead into somewhere else then. I feel like we should jump into the meat and potatoes because, go on, James, say it, go on.
The crown.
It's not Rolex, it's not Rolex, go on.
What do you mean it's not Rolex?
The real reason you gathered us here today is to tell us about your former favorite brand.
Who's my former favorite brand?
Bremont.
Oh God. Okay. No. I'm. You know what? I'm on a. I'm genuinely on a kind of like be positive about them. Kick.
Okay. Let's hear this then.
Okay. So I mean the logo's trash. That's fair enough. That's like let's start with that. That's we're leading well.
This is good. This is okay. Can I just say right? Like, I think because if you just look at the Bremont words, that's fine, right? Like, I think you know, making a step with a bolder font. Like, if you look at all the fashion houses over the last 10 years, they've all started to do that. They've all started to make their word only logo their main thing, and then just done it bold. I think that works. Now, the compass logo thing, aside from it not tying back to kind of anything that Bremont has done before, which is also fine, I think...
It's a propeller on top of a compass. Did you not get that?
There's a board meeting that was missed that included some market research of brand positioning of other brands with compasses in their logos that exist in Britain. And I think that marketing meeting was missed. And a reason why I say that is because brands like this, and obviously Bremont is not at the scale of like, say, Coca-Cola or whatever, right? But they pay branding agencies or whatever, sometimes millions, right? I'm not saying Bremont is paying millions because that's not their ballpark, but they're going to be paying thousands, tens, maybe hundreds of thousands for branding advice or market research or this, that, and the other, right? And to completely forget or graze over brands like River Island and Stone Island and like other brands that have compasses in their logos, it feels like they miss because there's no this, that doesn't make sense. Do you know what I mean? Like
completely.
There's somebody in a boardroom who does branding and knows branding of brands that exist in Britain, and Bremont is a British brand. Somebody would have picked it up and been like, oh, that kind of looks like that, though. Are you sure you want to go ahead with it? You know, not saying that that's a bad look. Like, take opinion of that logo off the table. Mm-hmm. Clashing it with other people's public perception of if you show them that logo, what are they going to think straight away?
Yeah.
People are going to go with the brands that they've heard of for a long time already, right? Like, that's a normal thing. And I think that is just... That's something that shouldn't have really been overlooked, in my opinion. From a branding point of view, I just feel like that... Yeah, it's something that was missed. And then
it also doesn't help that they can't fit it on the dial and have the hands at 10-2 on the Supermarine.
Yeah. That's something that I've noticed on the listing images on the website. The hands can't be put at like 10-2 because like the logo's quite big.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, oh, I never noticed that. Yeah.
Which is
another embarrassing
kind of, you'd think you might. There might be an indicator of something wrong if that sort of stuff can't happen. I think when I first saw these, they leaked this, didn't they? A little bit, but it was leaked a little bit before. I think my heart just sank, because having heard all the build-up, having heard all of the interviews that were given about what they're planning to do and what they've got all these, you know, Amazing Man stuff, it sounded awesome. It sounded really positive. It sounded like it was genuinely going to be something special. You know, this British brand kind of powering on to be, you know, to be a, I don't know, a kind of more international one. So, okay, so thinking, when I was saying about being more positive, apart from the logo, if you take the logo out of the situation, the watches are not that bad. There are lots and lots of details of every single one that I think are wrong, as in just straight up wrong. But that's a personal opinion and that sort of stuff. And and I guess that you mentioned about the kind of positioning as a fashion brand. It may just be that they've decided that they can make a ton more money by selling watches to just different people. You know, so they're not, they've,
that's a good point.
Yeah.
They have no intention at all to aim at anyone else. All they want to sell to are the people who are buying those fashion watches, who are looking at that kind of spectrum. So they expect a whopping great logo in the middle. And frankly, they don't give a shit about the details, as in the rest of it, in the same way that, and thinking of the pricing, if they hadn't priced it the way they have, so they didn't produce this more affordable watch that they kind of hinted they were going to, possibly because people would have thought it was too cheap. I don't mean enthusiasts, but I would have thought the same people that are kind of going down that fashion-y thing are happy to wear, you know, I don't know, the word Louis Vuitton all over the chest or whatever, those people actually kind of expect it to be expensive.
It feels like they're putting themselves directly in competition with like Breitling.
I was just going to say, like,
and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
That feels like where it's positioned now, whereas before it was maybe slightly differently positioned, maybe against like a, I don't know, like a Tudor or a...
Yeah, it wanted to be fighting against the Tudor. At a higher price point, but yeah. I agree with that.
The sad thing for me is that the watches had some real like strong design cues in them that were like very Bremont and very unique. So like the triptych case, it was very Bremont and very unique, and also very clever design, both visually and like construction wise. And I kind of wish they'd just lent in to all of those things and just got rid of everything else around it. Like the S302s that they released recently were really nice looking watches. And what I hoped is that they do more of that, and they just had like leaned into that more. And like even things like the Martin Baker watch, like the shape of that watch and all of that sort of stuff, that they could have. What I'm sad about is that they could have just like really doubled down on that sort of a thing and created more of an identity around what they had, rather than trying to create something out of nothing.
Yeah, it very much feels as though the Bremont that we knew is entirely sort of gone now. There's sort of, I was scrolling through their feed the other day, and just to see, you know, kind of what was up and what was going on, and I got sort of, I don't know, 20 pictures deep, and then all of a sudden I got to stuff I started to like, and I was like, oh, what are these? And sure enough, it was the old stuff. And you're right, Philip, in those old sort of brand cues, that Tiptrick case, and yeah, it seems to have just completely gone out the window. And the Bremont, this is going to be remembered, will be this sort of this new image, and it's a completely new thing. It's a shame. I feel a little bit sad about it. It feels as though we've lost possibly one of sort of the UK's or Britain's bigger watch brands, from the enthusiast space at least. Not to say that it's lost, it still exists, it's just perhaps angling itself towards a new demographic. But you know, maybe they'll bring back something, although I do understand they're trying to tighten the catalogue, so maybe they will keep it tight.
What's weird is that, like, before Bremont, I liked the idea of Bremont more than I liked Bremont's, if that makes sense, right? Like I kind of always wanted them to do really well. Like I wanted, like them to kind of get past some of the PR mistakes they made and like kind of just like keep fighting and then hopefully get to a position where it's like, yeah, this is Bremont, like this is a British brand that is like thriving and all this, that and the other. So I wanted them to succeed, but none of their models really spoke to me in a way that I was like, yeah, I'm gonna put my money where my mouth is, sort of thing. But then now that this has happened and it's not, you know, it's the direction they want to go and it might be very, very successful. You know, I don't really know because I don't think I'm their market anymore in that respect. It makes the old model kind of speak to me when it would, like it's, yeah. Like now I know it's going or it's gone. I'm kind of like, oh, this, maybe I was not looking at it with the right lens. Do you know what I mean? And now that it's going, it's like, oh, maybe that triptych case, even though it's a little bit big, maybe I need to give it another chance. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Because now it's not like now it's this different. The Supermarine is going to lean into a completely different kind of case shape and everything else. But yeah, it's weird. Like maybe that's a psychological thing. You know, like now I know that, yeah, you want what you can't have in a way. Like, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Loss aversion, yeah.
So it's, I mean, I feel like it's a shame in that regard, but that's obviously talking quite selfishly in my own opinions of the things that I want out of Bremont. But I mean, maybe it does well. Maybe, I don't know. I was shocked when I first saw these watches because they're so out of left field, which is kind of what they wanted to do. But at the same time, yeah, just I have no idea of like what the actual, and also I think being in the enthusiast kind of like space and sphere all the time, it is like a vacuum chamber, and yeah. Like you kind of only know the opinions of like the enthusiasts that are within it. So I don't know what the general perspective of this launch is. So I'm really kind of like curious to know like how well it does, what people's opinion of it is.
I think one thing that I think they have got right is, so like they're leaning into the land, sea and air and like having the watches out in the field and all of that sort of stuff. So like from a marketing perspective and kind of like that idea of like leaning into like a tool watch, I think that's there, but the brand piece and the kind of the watches that go with it doesn't really feel super cohesive. Because they are so, I guess, different, especially that kind of field watch. And I didn't quite understand the chronograph. So there's like a chronograph version of that Terra Nova, which doesn't really make sense to me. Like a chronograph field watch.
Yeah.
That needs explaining, which feels like if you need to explain something doesn't really make sense.
Let's quickly talk about the crown. I joked about the Invicta thing. I think it's cool as watches go, but it's ugly as anything. You know, it's this big old lump of metal, isn't it? And I think that's it's kind of cool, isn't it? It's a sort of, in a sort of weird, flexy way. I'm glad it exists. I can't imagine who'd ever want one.
I think it's for cartel, like for cartel gangsters, that's what it is.
It's if you need to shift a certain amount of gold, and that's a very useful way to carry it, I suppose.
It's like The Rock.
It's for Conor McGregor, isn't it? You need like those biceps as well. The idea of carrying around a big lump of gold on your arm. So you need that combination.
Like a pirate.
Do you guys like it as in its own right?
It's not something I think I would ever aspire to wear or own, but you know, I'm not unhappy that it exists. I think it's, you know, it's got its place for those birdie pirates. I'm sure they'll love it. And you know, if somebody just wants a GFY watch, what better?
That's true. Yeah. What about the new GMT Master 2 or whatever it's called, though, with the black and grey bezel?
Yeah, I like it. I personally really like the black and grey combo on GMTs. As somebody who, although I do have quite a number of colourful watches in sort of my own brand's lineup, I naturally do gravitate sort of towards those monochromatic tones. And GMTs are things that I've been thinking more and more about in recent years and months. And a black and grey colour scheme is something that I personally think looks fantastic. Yeah, I do like that they've put in a little pop of colour with that green GMT. And if I was Rolex and if I was designing that watch, personally, I wouldn't choose green, but hey, you know, it's all about options, right?
It's almost like a reissue of the original one. So the first ceramic steel.
Black. Yeah.
So, which I really like. I mean, I liked that GMT, but I was just been mulling over like which GMT would I buy now if I was buying a GMT, because there's tons of options now. So you've got all the two tones. You've basically never had this much choice in a GMT, in the catalog at the same time. Like the only one they are actually missing is a Coke, but you can have a Pepsi, you can have that grey black one, you can have the Batman. So, yeah, which one do you pick if you're in the market for a GMT Master? I think is the question. I think this one's the most sedate one.
Yeah,
like the because the thing is with GMT Masters, whether it's the old one or the new one, is if you've got that two tone bezel on it, they're really recognizable and they're quite flashy in a way. So I think the nice thing about this one is it flies under the radar and it's not got the crown on the wrong hand side. Yeah, I mean, it flies under the radar in comparison to the other ones.
I kind of feel that Rolex have, and I think this is a show thing in general. I think watches and jewelry are the gap has shrunk between them for most of the big brands. Looking of, you know, a non-show brand, but Omega, you know, we were talking about them going shiny. I think Rolex are doing the same. I mean, look at this perpetual 1908 platinum with the blue dial, you know, with that guilloche stuff, whatever it's called. It's crazy blingy, really, isn't it? For what's meant to be a sedate dress watch, it's quite blingy. Although on that front, on a positive side, I mean, the Rolex stuff kind of take it or leave it a bit for me, if I'm honest. But it hasn't been talked about much, but they've actually done a black dial version of that perpetual 1908.
Oh, have they?
Yeah, it's quite sedate. I don't know. I think it's white gold, but I don't know that for sure. I think that's probably, if that is a real thing, then that would be my favorite thing from them this year. I think doing, and if they'd made it 36 mil, that'd be amazing. And that's one I'd actually consider as a dress watch. But it really comes down to that whole comparison of Rolex and the competitors. Frankly, the perpetual, I mean, it's not a Patek, is it? It may be functionally better than a Patek. You know, it's still not a Patek. And it doesn't have the history or the finishing or the, you know, it's still machine made as opposed to the Pateks being hand finished and all that sort of stuff. So it still, in my opinion, other than its brand name, has a very difficult place in the watch world.
How much is a Calatrava then? Are they around the same price?
I think about a similar Calatrava. I think it's about like 32, 34, something like that. They're not much different between them, which is crazy. You know, a Rolex dress watch being as much as a Patek is kind of insane. But brand power.
Yeah, I mean, I what I hope they've done is they haven't released all that many kind of steel sports models, and hopefully it means that people will actually start to be able to buy steel sports models, because there's no like hype around it, if that makes sense. They can just fulfill what they've already got in the catalogue, but one can hope.
The debate of Rolex having value to the enthusiast gets harder and harder as Tudor get better and better. So as their GMT gets, you know, gets the range certainly gets better, as the, you know, once their chrono gets better, all these sort of things. Really, I mean, what relevance does Rolex have to your normal person, other than, you know, kind of people with an awful lot of cash?
Well, that new Black Bay is basically like what you buy now when you're on your wait list for your no date sub, isn't it?
But you'd probably end up not bothering with the sub, I feel.
Yeah, maybe.
For an enthusiast, I think that's the point. So if someone that doesn't, you know, I don't value having Rolex on the dial of my watch over having Tudor. I like them both as brands, but I'm perfectly comfortable with Tudor. And I don't, I think we've lost them.
We've lost the roving reporters. The internet connection has gone down in Geneva.
Gents, let's cut off there. Thanks very much, Tom and Ken, our roving reporters. Looking forward to hearing your download of what you get up to. Tom, it's been really nice to see you, and I look forward to doing more.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on today. I look forward to catching up again soon with part two.
And also, can you make sure that Ken behaves as well? We've heard stories about him on the road, and you know, and you're close to the red light district and all that.
I'm not the wild one.
But yeah, thanks guys. And yeah, we'll catch up again, hopefully like while we're still here, and then we'll do like a download afterwards.
Cool. Sounds good.
Cool. Cheers.
Thank you very much.
See you later, guys.